You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Fantastic Fest. Here we are. And you knew this time would come. It's Richard Whittaker.
Morning!
And some of his picks.
Morning!
For Fantastic Fest 2016.
Some of my picks out of the 36 films I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. Like, I wasn't super excited about a lot of stuff coming in. But this has been a year of a lot of really good discoveries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of surprises that you're like, wow, I totally wouldn't have picked that to be one of the
never
films
saw
I like
that
best.
Some of these coming.
But let's go ahead and get started with your first film.
Well, that would be Belief, The Possession of Janet Moses, which is an exorcism documentary. We haven't had one of those in a few years.
Sort of a docudrama.
Yeah, well, it has reenactments.
Yeah.
And this is the true story of a woman called Janet Moses, who is a Maori. And she was going through a lot of mental health issues, seemingly going through a very serious mental breakdown, with a lot of relationship issues. And her family went, well, clearly she's possessed. And they basically built this weird mythology for themselves about why she was clearly possessed,
mm-hmm.
what had possessed her, what had caused this. And they end up killing her in an exorcism. And this is right at the beginning. You see this.
Yeah, it doesn't count as a spoiler because they tell you.
Yeah,
right,
like you walk in. Like the opening moment is the police walking in, and she is dead in the living room, surrounded by her family. There is water everywhere. She's drowned on the bed.
Yeah,
and you're like,
how did this happen?
It's like A, mechanically, how did this happen? But B, you know, what leads the family that absolutely loves her and thinks that they are doing absolutely the right thing for her to kill her?
The oddest thing about this is that it's not what you expect when you first hear about it, right? You're expecting a traditional Catholic exorcism. And sure enough, one of those has killed someone before, too.
Oh,
more
lots.
Than one.
In fact, there's a murder. There's a murder trial in the States at the moment. A woman
mm-hmm.
was charges filed against her for stabbing her son to death in, I think it was Pittsburgh, 2 months ago.
But
it happens a lot.
But what makes this stand apart, really, is that these are people who that's not their religious base at all. In fact, they're kind of just making it up as they go along.
It's based on... this is one of the things that it really deals with. It's based on traditional Maori belief systems. But one of the issues it deals with is that Maori culture has become so subsumed that even they don't really know what it is that they're looking at or they're talking
yes.
about. That this is that they're trying to reconstruct their culture. And there's moments where they interview an actual priest, and he goes, I have no idea where they got any of this nonsense from. And then there's a lot of it about how does the legal system deal with what is clearly, by any definition, her family got together and killed her. But they did it for the best of intentions, and because it was a group thing, who do you blame? So there's a lot of those issues in there. It doesn't necessarily tackle those as well, the legal questions, like when you've got 40 people in a room, how do they pick the 8 people they finally took to trial, and you know, how do they put the case against it? That's in there, but it's not as well formed as this bigger question of like what, you know, how you formulate a belief and how it influences your behavior, which is the really fascinating bit about this film.
Yeah, when I came at it originally, I'm like, well, fuck these people, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's also my heathenish side, like fuck anybody who kills someone because of their faith.
Yep.
But it's just not as simple as that, especially in this particular case. As you watch these people, clearly love this woman. She's got this huge extended family, and they're standing around her chanting for days.
Literally days.
Yeah, passing
and
out.
You have the growth of groupthink in there, and they talk to various members of the family and say, well, why didn't you step in? Because they'd probably think that I was possessed. So there's this element of them knowing that this is clearly bullshit as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, we've started down this path, and you're not quite sure who really believes this and who's just going along because it's the safest thing to do, and maybe it'll work, why not? And that's really fascinating because that's the moment where you just go, it's not just about what you are convinced of or what you believe in, it's what you're afraid of other people believing in.
Yes. Absolutely, and it's interesting that by the end you actually feel really bad for everyone involved.
Yes.
You know, which I did not expect.
Yeah.
But speaking of demons,
yes.
Let's talk about Sadako versus Kayako, or as we like to call it, the ring versus the grudge.
Which is actually, I think that's actually the name in Japan, it was definitely originally being pitched as Ring versus Grudge.
Mm-hmm.
So you have two of the great Japanese horror franchises smashing together. Now, there is not a great tradition of horror franchises mixing.
No, not in Japan.
Well, generally.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, everybody remembers Freddy versus Jason, but recently I rewatched House of Frankenstein, which mm-hmm. was the first time Universal tried to put everybody in the same movie, and that is such a clusterfuck.
This generation needs its own Abbott and Costello to fight Freddy and Jason,
yes.
is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, Harold and Kumar versus Freddy would be fine.
I would watch that, or Tucker and Dale. You know?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
well, apparently we'll get another Tucker and Dale movie.
Eventually. Yeah.
But
this one...
It's Sadako from the Ring Cycle, mm-hmm. and Kayako from the Grudge Cycle,
and her little boy,
and her little cat boy. What's really interesting is that this was actually co-written by, and I can never remember his name, but it's the guy who's behind the whole Grudge series.
Mm-hmm.
What's really weird is that clearly he did not want to make a Grudge movie; he wanted to make a Ring movie.
Oh yeah,
you know, Kayako is barely in this. The Death House is barely in this. But instead, what it starts off with is this fascinating idea of, you know, these stories have been hanging around for years, and who has a videotape anymore?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the wonderful thing about The Ring, is that, you know, it was so contemporary that it was like, you know, this spell, this curse is being transmitted, not just, you know, as with The Grudge, in like a cursed house, but it's using a modern piece of technology. The film was totally reliant on VHS and cell phones.
Yes.
Well, now they're irrelevant. And people don't actually even pick up their cell phone anymore, so they may not pick up when Sadako calls you and goes, you're going to die in 2 days. So they actually deal with the retro element with two schoolgirls who they want to transfer one of their parents' wedding tapes to digital. They buy this old VHS deck, and there's a tape in there. They play the tape, and it's the cursed tape. So
yeah.
Triggering this. Well, the fun thing is, how does this end up crossing with Kayako's story?
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of pottering along in the background. It is, I think it's like a ratio of 3 to 1 on screen time.
Yeah, for sure, until the third act,
yeah.
where then,
and
it's,
then
like,
it's like
all guns blazing.
And the third act is actually pretty short.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's a lot of waiting for them to clash, and then you go, oh, this is what happens when you put them together.
Well,
that's rather.
And I want to tell people who are like traditionally with J-Horror, like, yeah, but it's so slow, it takes forever to get there. This is not one of those movies.
No.
This is J-Horror on crack.
Yeah.
I mean, even to the point where, like, okay, traditionally it's 7 days, right, for the tape before you die?
Yeah.
No, now it's two. Because some motherfuckers need to die.
Yeah. there's no sitting on your hands here. It's the most Americanized, I think, of the Ring movies.
Definitely.
And it does throw out some of the mythology, and I think because of a lot of people, they probably went, you know what? A lot of people probably didn't see the later ones, and they definitely didn't see the later Juon films.
Yeah.
Although, do you know the Grudge films got up, the US Grudge films actually got up to number 3?
Yep.
Who knew?
Yep.
And I gotta say, I actually do like the US remake of Ring.
I do too.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah, I actually prefer it to the Japanese original. Of the Japanese ones, Ring Zero is my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think these, you know, this is really good.
Yeah.
And it's like,
this was the biggest
surprise
of the festival.
Oh, yeah.
Where I was like, I did not expect this to be as fun as it was.
I've called this the Godzilla versus Mothra of long-haired J-horror.
Yeah.
Because I think it takes two things that you're kind of like, well, they're in the same world, but they work on very, very different rules. And it works.
Yeah.
They managed to put them together in a way that actually excited me.
It helps a lot that they kind of call him this guy who's like a Mr. Vampire type. And
oh, yeah.
His blind, like, child assistant, who are actually really good at this.
Yeah.
And fighting, like, demons and ghosts and stuff. And the just wonderful moment where his conclusion is like, we're just going to have to, like, make her fight another ghost.
Yeah.
And you're like,
you
laugh, because it's like, this is what we're here for.
Yeah. It's a really smart way of getting two franchises that really probably shouldn't be together in the same room, and it works.
Totally works.
And what's really good is that when you have the creepy, the ghost is coming for you sequences,
mm-hmm.
they're really good.
Mm-hmm.
They're really effective. But, you know, that's part, I can never come up with the director's name, but he's a J-horror director from way back. He did Grotesque, he did The Curse, you know, this guy knows what he's doing. So it's a really good melding of talent. It's not like when they got Freddy vs. Jason, and they just went, let's get some kids who've never really made a film together and a half-baked script and just fucking make some money. Like, this is people who've gone, you know what, we've got to have a good idea. We've got to have a good MacGuffin.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, this really pays off, and I did not expect it to be as good as it is.
My only complaint at all about this movie, really, is that the actual video, when you see it, is kind of dull. Like, usually
yeah,
before, they're very surreal and all over the place.
Bring the original video back.
Why is it changed? Why did they ever change the video? I don't understand.
Bring the original one back from the first film.
Yeah.
It's so perfect and upsetting and disturbing because it really ties into, it implies a bigger cosmos, and there's, you know, presence of the Buddhist hell in there, all this stuff. Yeah. And this is just, you know, Sadako in a room looking creepy.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's... No, you could have put
more work into it than that.
You could have done a lot better.
But overall, this is the most fun J-horror film, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a blast. I had a huge amount of fun with this film.
So the last film we're going to talk about is what is unquestionably one of the highlights of this whole festival, and
yes,
that is Park Chan-wook's The Handmaiden.
I'm going to go on record and say that I personally believe that this is... And I say, I don't use this word very often. I think the last time I used this word was last year with Ben Wheatley's High Rise. Mm-hmm. I think this is Park Chan-wook's masterpiece.
It is. I think it is, too.
I think this is an extraordinary film. It's based on the novel Fingersmith, which is a period Victorian Gothic written in the 10 years ago about a servant who is looking after her mistress, but in fact she is a little criminal scumbag who has been sent to try and convince the mistress to fall in love with this other scumbag who is pretending to be a lord. It's transferred from Victorian London to occupation era Korea. So there's all these additional levels that are put on it because the servant is Korean, her mistress is Japanese, but the mistress's uncle is Korean, but he's trying desperately to be Japanese. He's trying to throw everything about himself away. But you know, the handmaiden and the mistress steadily fall in love. So this is a very powerful piece of Korean queer cinema.
Yeah. Maybe the Citizen Kane of lesbian romance films.
Yeah, that has been. But there's like, you know, all these levels of politics and class and sexuality and madness built into it. And it is, when it gets high gothic, it gets high gothic. Because there is a mysterious library.
Yes.
I mean, how wonderfully Victorian.
Filled
can
with
get?
Like archaic and mysterious, like perverse. Pornography.
Yes. And this is really a film about coming to terms with who you are and about sense of identity. And sexuality is a part of that, but then there are these issues of class and everybody's pretending to be something they're not, and everybody is pretending, you know, half the characters want to be Japanese and the other half are pretending to be Japanese because they really want to be Korean, but they have to hide the fact that, I mean, there's just all these levels,
yeah,
of deception and delusion, including at the end of the first act a hammer blow, because this is split into very specific acts.
Yes.
That a lot of this film is about going, what you saw previously, you have to reconsider what you've seen. And it does it so beautifully, so elegantly. This is 2 hours 40, but it flies past in an extraordinary way because it's just entrancing. And it is beautiful.
Yeah, it's not.
This is gorgeous
film. Romance film about class. It's also a really effective con film.
Yes.
That keeps turning and twisting on you, and you keep having to rethink the things you've seen before. And let's face it, the most gorgeous cinematography we've seen this entire festival.
Oh, yeah.
Knock it out of the park. Nobody
and the
sets
set
out.
Design as well.
Nobody sets up a shot like Park Chan-wook. Yeah, nobody.
And what's really fascinating is that for most of its duration, people always look at Park and are going to say, well, you know, he's a guy who does extraordinarily stylized violence. Mm-hmm. And there are violent moments in this. But the first third, this is just, it's a Merchant Ivory film for the first third.
Yeah.
It really is. But it's, you know, in Korean.
Considerably
so
less dry than your average Merchant Ivory film.
We have to say, it's pretty hot.
Oh, yeah.
This is, you know, Park Chan-wook, a man who is known for shooting extraordinary violence, shoots some of the best sex scenes will see in cinema this
week. And if you're one of those people who's uncomfortable watching a sex scene, like a long, erotic, very explicit sex scene with other people.
I've got to shift to seat a few times, but that's a different story.
Then maybe this isn't your movie.
Probably not.
Because there's a lot of that in here.
A lot of that.
But then as we get towards the third act, there's also some really disturbing sex stuff as well.
Yeah.
And even a little bit of like a octopus, is all I'm saying.
There is an octopus moment in there, which is actually a key part of... 19th century Japanese erotica.
For some reason.
Which is weird.
Yeah, I never got that.
People think that tentacle porn emerged with Legend of the Overfiend.
No.
Not even close.
Not even close. Yeah, one of the most famous Japanese erotica pictures ever is of, like, a woman making love to an octopus. I mean, you've seen it.
For reasons.
For sure.
For reasons.
In fact, it was in Mad Men.
Yes.
Prominently. And it's in here prominently, too.
Very much so.
Yeah. But top notch, one of the best of the festival. Richard, real quick, just name off some of the movies you recommend. recommend the most that people check out from this year's Fest?
Safe Neighborhood. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic subversion of the classic home invasion genre. I called it the evil Home Alone. I think it does it beautifully. My favorite film of the entire festival so far, Dark Song.
Okay.
I think it's extraordinary. Supernatural horror, basically two people locked in a house doing an invocation. Extraordinary, hypnotic, amazing performances. Boyka, Undisputed.
Boyka.
We just got out and we're like, Boyka, Boyka. Scott Adkins, kicking people in the head with a Russian accent. Brilliant.
How could that
Can't go wrong.
Wrong. Yeah.
Cheesy as hell, but just wonderful. This has just been a really, like I said, this has just been a really, really strong festival.
Agreed.
Yeah, pretty much beginning to end. I've seen a couple of films that I actually disliked, not because they were badly made, but because I think they were morally questionable. The directors didn't grasp the material. But all in all, Raw as well, French.
Yes, Raw is wonderful.
Which, if you have heard that this is like a birth of the French New Extreme, it's not. It's not. This is a slightly bloodier version of Lindsay Anderson's If, and it's wonderful.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
That's really what it is. Yeah. This has been one of the best Fantastic Fests.
Yeah, it's actually been a toad. Despite my misgivings when I was looking originally at the lineup, it turned out to be a great film.
And I will also say the opening and closing night films, Arrival, deserves to be huge.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a wonderful intellectual science fiction film, which really works. And you haven't seen it yet, but Nacho Vigalondo's Colossal.
Coming up next for me.
Which is heartfelt and hilarious and is... It's Nacho really going up to the big leagues in a way. I like Nacho, but after Open Windows, I thought he was just going to become a lot more experimental and disappear into this. This could be Nacho actually becoming a respectable name director with budgets.
Yeah, he seems like he's even been sober this year.
I talked to him, and it was the day after the karaoke, and I said, "How are you doing?" And he went, "I'm really hungover. I went to the karaoke, and I couldn't make it to the after party."
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm old. I'm getting old sucks, which is actually one of the themes of the film.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much, Richard.
My pleasure, as always.
All right.